Attention musicians, do you want to hear your music on vinyl but just can't afford the 100 minimum that most vinyl cutting houses require? Well, you might want to do a short run, maybe 1 to 50. And Austin Signal can help you. Austin Signal is a high-quality recording studio and vinyl cutting facility located 15 minutes outside of Austin. In addition to traditional modern recording services, the studio also specializes in some very unique offerings, including short-run vinyl production, single mic recording, and direct-to-disc recording. Just go to austinsignal.com, click on the How Did I Get Here in their menu, or just follow the link in the text of this podcast. When you get to their page, enter the promo code HDIGH for 10% off short-run vinyl cutting. That's right. Promo code HDIGH gets you 10% off. That's Austin Signal, gang. Go get some vinyl. Let's get down. Attention, Austin guitarists. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Jason over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only is he the best guy in town, he's got the best prices and the fastest service in town. Again, find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or at jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Whether it's acoustic or electric or even a bass, J. Scott Luthery, that's the place for you. Find him on Facebook. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, Johnny Howdy.
When we talk. All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Special show dropping in the middle of the week. Episode 851, I got a very special show for you guys. I'm talking to Kenny Withrow from New Bohemians, from Edie Burkell and New Bohemians, a guitar player, amazing guitar player. He's been around for a while. And let me tell you real quickly, I know there's probably a lot of people coming to the show for the very first time, maybe fans of Kenny, maybe fans of New Bohemians. Here's the deal. My name is Johnny Gowdy. I'm a musician. I live in Austin. I've been playing music and having bands since like 1983. And in 2011, I decided to start this podcast where I would talk to other musicians about basically our lives, their journey artistically and personally, and also how they handle their careers and the whole thing. So I play in this band called Skyrocket. That's a cover band. We play super hits of the 70s and 80s. I'm also a songwriter, and I put out my own music as well. But I play in this band Skyrocket, which has seven people in it. It's a really good time. It's a cover band. My friend Kyle Crusham is in that band, but he also plays with Edie Burkell and New Bohemians. He joined the band as an auxiliary member. I don't know if he joined the band or if he's a hired guy. I don't know how that works exactly. I know that the core of the band is Edie, And now it's the original New Bohemians, the guys from the very first late 80s incarnation of the band. And Kyle plays along with them. He also produced their latest record, Rocket, that's available now, wherever it is you stream and download your jams. Anyway, they were getting together here this week to do some kind of like social media stuff, some kind of promo stuff, and shooting some video stuff. And I got to go down to Soundcheck here in Austin and sit down and talk to Kenny Withrow for about 30 minutes or so about his journey. He was a really nice guy. Kyle's a really nice guy for setting it up. I want to thank him for doing that. And I went down there. I got to tell you guys this. I went down there, met Kenny. I think I met him a long time ago in late 80s. I talk about it with him. But met him. We sat down. We had this great conversation. Then the rest of the guys started coming in. John Bush, the percussionist, he's been on the show, and he's a pal of mine. And then Brad Hauser walked in with his dog, and he's been on the show. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for a few years. And then Edie Burkell came in. And I got to say, gang, I was a little bit starstruck. She came into the room. She was coming in to start filming this stuff that day. And I was kind of sitting on the couch, and I was like, whoa, there she is. Started talking to people in the room about, you know, guys in the band. Oh, how's it going? What's going on? Nice shirt, whatever. And so finally I was like, well, I should probably stand up and say hi. So I said, hi, Edie, I'm Johnny. And then I think she thought I was like a PA that's there shooting it. And she goes, oh, hi, I'm Edie. Nice to meet you. Thank you for all your hard work. And then I didn't want to make it awkward, so I said, "You're welcome." And then I left. My friend Kyle was like, hang out. But it seemed like they all had stuff to do. And I feel weird hanging out when there's a bunch of stuff to do. And I don't really have anything to do. I'm just watching people do stuff. I mean, it's fun to watch people do stuff, but it does feel weird after a little while. You feel a little in the way. Anyway, what a great group of people, a great band, Edie Brickell and New Bohemians. They're out there. They're playing shows. They've been playing festivals all summer. They've been joined on stage by Bob Weir, who I know is a big hero of Kenny's. We talk about that. And I want to thank Kenny for taking the time to sit down and talk to me. I want to thank Kyle for setting it up. And Soundcheck, that was a great place to go. Sit down and have a great conversation with my man, Kenny Withrow from New Bohemians. So without further ado, enjoy our conversation. Let's get down. You recently got to play with Bob Weir.
Yeah,
I watched that on the internet.
That was interesting for so many different reasons. Well, we got to play Lockin' Festival, which is the best of the Jam Bam festivals. So we were honored to get to be there and play, right, for sure. And Bobby's funny. You know, he had just sat in with Paul Simon at the Outside Lands Festival that we played the week before. Uh-huh. And he approached Paul as well. You know, he just is a guy who sits in with everybody and likes to play. He's just seems to be on a real trip about playing and all the time. Like, maybe he's always been like that, probably. But anyway, he sat in with Paul, and then, you know, he realized that we were sharing the same festival a couple of weeks later, and he did extend an invitation. You know, would we like him to sit in? Absolutely, you know. So that was going to happen, and all of a sudden it was the day of the show, and there was much debate on what song to do. I was kind of leaning towards Deep Ellum Blues because we are from Deep Ellum,
right,
you know.
Right.
So yeah. I thought that was really cool. He had some other songs in mind that the band hadn't rehearsed lately, and it was mainly the Bob Dylan tune, Hard Rain's Gonna Fall.
Right.
We haven't played that in many years, so we didn't necessarily pull that together. But anyway, he came by our trailer with his guitar, just completely instigated the entire thing, and even showed up for the rehearsal with his guitar. And so we just sat there and we're playing Deep Ellum Blues before I know it. And Edie was nice enough to grab the camera and take a picture of some videos of me playing, jamming with Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one with that stage that rotated?
Yeah, that's the one. The stage rotates. It's what Woodstock was meant to do, but it never did happen at Woodstock. I don't think the rotating stage happened. Yeah, so when you're playing facing forward, there's a band behind you setting up.
Right. And so then, they did it at Live Aid?
They might have done that. It's a really smart way to do it. I mean, it's the best way to do it because they literally, and we didn't, although we didn't do it very gracefully, you don't even have to stop playing between bands. But
you guys, I remember I watched that whole intro of it.
Yeah.
You were playing?
I was playing.
Yeah.
Nobody could hear me. Nobody in the band could hear me.
Oh.
The plan was to start it because we like improvising. We were like, it's a jam festival. We're going to make up a song. In fact, we would try to do that with Bobby as well. But they were, it was the JGG band, Jerry Garcia band, was doing Eyes of the World, a Dead tune, which I know very well. And they were done. So the E chord is hanging out. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to go to the relative minor, basically the same chord, but a minor version.
Right.
And I'm going to start a jam. And everybody's just looking at me like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, this is the jam. I've started. Let's play it. And everybody's just like, we can't hear you at all. So there was a little hiccup there, and we kind of meandered into it. And finally we
blew it. It seemed natural.
That's
I'll tell
awesome.
You what. As someone watching it, I was like, okay. Yeah. You're just kind of like, hey, here we are.
I had to just abandon ship and start the first song. And we did Green Magic, the first song, which was fun. Yeah.
That's a great song. I was noticing when I was listening to Rocket, that was basically my preparation, and reading a very short interview with you.
Mm.
That it was chock full of information, though, I'll tell you that.
Oh, wow.
I was listening to Rocket, and you're really elegant, and you know when to step forward, you know when to hang back and keep the groove going and things like that, these sort of like, but it seems like you've always been like that. But on this record, I noticed that every guitar solo was different. There was a characteristic where there was some sort of bombast in a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Superheroes.
Superhero, yeah.
Yeah, what did you use on that?
That's this, I call it a freak pedal. It's made by, the name of the actual company, it doesn't come to mind right now, but it's sort of a Eurorack pedal that a lot of times keyboard players will use these pedals. And so you can send a sort of straight synth patch into it, and you can just freak it out. You know, it does all sorts of, it generates all sorts of feedback and all sorts of loops and circuits that go into one another. It's a freaky pedal, right. But it also has this ungodly distortion.
Yeah.
You know, so as a pedal, it's supposed to just go freak out on its own, but I like dial all of that out as much as possible.
Right.
And just use the insane distortion that's in it. But what's funny about it is it sounds different every time I turn it on, and you never know when those freaky sounds are actually going to be in your tone, and it's just an X Factor pedal.
Is it like analog oscillators or something like that?
Right. It's things like that. Just
they do their own thing.
They just do their own things like that, but I temper it down. There's a gate that I have it heavily gated, so that's why it stops really abruptly in the middle of the solo a few times, because I'm getting all of that.
Yeah.
That's a serious tweaker pedal to make that happen on that solo. I really love that. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no, it's great. There was another thing I wanted to ask you about. Like, this band, you guys have been together over 30 years.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. With it, well, you know, yes.
Yeah, with some breaks.
Sure.
Healthy breaks, probably.
Absolutely, yes.
You, at this point, like so far, and you guys are just finished an album?
We did, yeah. Okay. We just finished another one.
And so when you guys go in and write songs, first of all, it must be amazing because you're there with, like, your family. Like, this is the original band.
That's true. And you know, us getting back together, it was generated from exactly what you're talking about. We were getting... I was teaching after-school program for a free... a program for kids after school teaching guitar.
That's great.
And it was a public funded program at the time, so I wanted to do a benefit. I was like, man, we should do a benefit for this school. It'll be great. These kids are wonderful. And so we were just doing that.
Yeah.
We hadn't played in a while, a couple years. But we get together and rehearsing, we do rehearse, but we just jam immediately. We just start playing immediately. That's just what we do.
That's the nature of this. That's how you became this band.
That's
right?
That is absolutely what we do all the time. We just improvise, you know, to a fault sometimes, you know, we're not getting stuff done and things like that. If I was ever on tour and I was in New York, I was like, Edie, we'd get together and we'd just jam and write songs. We have a ton of songs that Edie and I have just written, the two of us sitting around, just because we just do that all the time. So anyway, so we had done that, you know, we were supposed to be rehearsing, and we were like four songs into it, and it's like, well, you know, let's record these. And then all of a sudden there was a little body of songs, and we were off to the races for sure. You know, we were just going to do the gig, and it was discovered that Kyle Crushem, you know, I did some working with him, because Edie was finishing up a solo record of hers. And we got along great, and all these things came together, and yeah, we made Rocket.
Yeah, yeah, that record's fantastic.
Thank you.
It really is, man. It's weird in this time, because it must be weird for you guys, because like you made a record, and you were like on top of the world from the get-go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's almost like working backwards in a way. Like you came out like up there, like on Saturday Night Live, and like on the late shows and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, that was really fast. We were still playing in Dallas. We hadn't really even played out of Texas. We
played kids?
Austin a couple times. Yeah, I was like 22, 21. And did you say kids? Yeah, we were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we had played Austin twice and maybe Shreveport and hadn't toured. You know, we played in Dallas hundreds and hundreds of times already. We played sometimes 15 times a week. So we were definitely a schooled live band. But then the record came out, and you know, 2 weeks later it was definite radio play, and a month and a half later we're like invited to be on Saturday Night Live, and we hadn't even toured yet. So we literally played Saturday Night Live as the first gig of our first tour, and then went to Atlanta and started the tour proper. And that tour sold out. It was in smaller venues. It was just a freak, you know, freak show.
Was there any kind of like, did you then think like, well, this is how it works? Or did you, I mean, because that's a mind fuck, man. You're like a guy living in Dallas playing with your friends, and then you're on Saturday Night Live, and then you're like on a sold out tour.
Well, you know, there was the level of connection that was happening in Dallas with our crowd, with our people, with our crowd, with our community, and us at the time was already a big red flag. There was something, we knew something was there. It, whether it would translate nationally or whatever, I don't know, but there was a connection going on there that I'd never seen before in my young, you just knew something special was happening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just, it's hard to explain when a community and a group, because Edie reflects what's going on in the environment around her, in the community. What I am was very much sort of Whole Foods. You go into Whole Foods at that.
I worked at Whole Foods at the time, bro.
So if you go
Houston,
in with, if you sniffle one time, you got five people around you giving you all sorts of, you know, it's just like, it was intense to go in, you know, so it was just sort of a back office kind of, cool it, you know what I am, you know. So a lot of things were reflecting what was going on, and just the level of engagement, we just thought something, you know. We didn't know it was going to be What I Am. Nobody knew it was going to be that song. I mean, when we played, that was just another song that we played live. There was no indication early on that that was going to be a thing. All the songs were equally what they were. So, anyway, yeah.
that's intense. It's awesome that, because I know Brad and I know John, but I know them post the year 2000. So probably they're whatever, you know what I mean? They're
sure.
Very down to earth and grounded people. I'm sure you were throughout that experience, but it must have been a little awkward on your own mind and just kind of like, who am I? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I guess a little bit of that, but it was odd in that what are we? What is the band? Because it did change.
Mainstream doesn't want dudes that walk on stage and make up a song as their first song. That's not what the mainstream is out there doing. So it must have been odd coming from that.
For sure. We were all of a sudden on Y95 in Dallas.
Yeah,
I'd never listened to Y95. I probably knew there was a Y95 before then, but I wasn't totally sure. So, yeah, it's you're thrust into a mainstream. But, again, our shows were kind of like that. Families would come. Parents would bring their kids and just, you know, it was a weird across-the-board appeal, you know, that we were already kind of feeling. And it was awesome that it translated and it was going to be What I Am. That was a surprise. But, yeah, to pull into some smaller towns and, you know, we were out selling Madonna at the time and just like, it was weird. For sure.
Awesome.
Because, I mean, you know, to go from Madonna and then all of a sudden here's your song and then on to another song when you're listening to the radio.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I feel lucky and I feel like we sort of snuck our way in and just, we'll see what we can do with it.
Yeah, it's interesting when someone that you view as like your kind of people breaks through and is like on that Y95 thing where you're like, wow, shit. Those are like our kind of dudes, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, that is funny because I do remember that night seeing you guys at Zelda's and coming home and making something to eat and watching TV and the Hard Rain's Gonna Fall video came on and I was like, I just watched those dudes while Mike, you know, was practically stripped on stage. It was before he was getting totally naked, but
that was and then I joined Billy Goat proper once the Nubos decided we were gonna not play.
How long were you in Billy Goat?
After that was the really early version of Billy Goat at when the first Buki cassette came out, and then we actually made a record called Bush Roaming Mammals, and I joined that band in 90, and that was Earl Harvin was the drummer, and that was a real heavier band. We had a real record, and it was like industrial, tribal, lots of drums, and really heavy music, and we traveled around, and that was what I did right after Nubos. It seemed like the perfect opposite thing to do.
Yeah. That scene of dudes, like, were you close with all the Ten Hands guys and Fever and the Funk House guys?
Absolutely, yeah. Because
To me, Fever and the Funk House is kind of like, to me, your sister band up there. Know what I mean?
They were and I don't think they would be bothered by me saying this because they told me it all the time. But they were the first band to come around. They're like, wow, we've influenced a band. You know, it was like a second generation. Like, wow. I mean,
it was like you guys, but more informed or also informed by the Stones.
Very much so. And they certainly, and I'm talking early days, you know, just conga player, similar guitar. And I eventually gave Chris Clarity some, you know, I call him lessons. He might call him a lesson. I sat down and played with him. And he's doing great, by the way, right now. But they had their own identity, and the Stones thing started coming in, and then they, you know, he was a storyteller, and they quickly had their own trip happening and got really big, in Dallas.
I might have seen them. Yeah, they used to come to Houston a lot. then. I was in a band that was managed by Fitzgerald's then, and so we had this great advantage where other, I can't remember what place Ten Hands manager was affiliated with, but they did a lot of show trades, so we got to play with a lot of those bands and got to know a lot of those guys. Yeah, and play at Dada.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Raul was the manager guy, or
I can't remember.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It was at the time when Joe had come in,
mm-hmm.
and Mike had left.
Okay.
Whatever time that was.
When he went on to Billy Goat. Or he was asked to leave when he poured a pitcher of beer on Paul's keyboard.
Oh, he did?
Or poured is a little... It might have spilled.
Yeah.
Definite beer, and he was traversing from the rafters above the stage. I think he kicked a drink over on his keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the end of it.
How was it playing with Earl?
Well, Earl's, you know, he's a powerhouse for sure. He was back then for sure. Earl's... He's a trip. It was a powerhouse. And my function in that band was feedback and get inside the groove and play hardcore rhythm. Because Philly Goat, the other guitar player, was about being Steve Vai over the top of this crazy stuff. So he was the shredder.
I remember that.
Yeah. So I was like, I had to get in there and like get intense with the rhythm, which I really liked, really digging in, you know, in the rhythm part of it, and then maybe making noise over the feedback over the drums, and yeah. It's like, all right, yeah, sign me up.
I have to say, every time I saw Billy Goat, I was just always astounded. Like, Mike is so fucking weird and so cool with it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah. I'd never seen anybody so free in my life.
Him and Kim together, for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't even really repeat stuff that would happen on stage, and you just kind of go, yeah, it's Kim and Mike, you know. But it was like they would bring their personal life and all sorts of parts of their life onto the stage and just share it.
yeah I don't even know if he would remember me, but I would consider him an acquaintance for sure. That he is like one of the people, grown men, that I've seen naked the most in my life. And that's just from going to see him play.
That manifested in such funny ways. We were playing in Lawrence, Kansas one time, and it was like the third time they played there. I think the first time they kind of got in trouble with the cops, which always helps, you know.
Yeah, that's
cops
awesome.
Know there's going to be naked people there, and so there's a big scene the next time. I was with them the third time they played, and everybody was there ready to get naked. It was the weirdest. It was the weirdest vibe showing up, and like, you know, we played the first song. I don't know if we started with everybody take your clothes off, which, you know, that was a big song in Billy Goat. But we finished the first song, and I'm standing there. I look back, and there's like 15 people just standing naked at the back of the stage, just sort of looking around. I mean, not running around being crazy, just standing there.
Yeah.
So it was just like the show. Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. That was weird. I mean, they eventually, you know, started getting more natural, but you don't want to 15 uncomfortable people just standing there naked.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe
crazy.
You do. I don't know. It depends on what you're into.
Do you still play with him? Stay in touch with Mike? I mean, I know he does a lot of different things.
When he does gigs, I usually get the call to do them, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm available, I want to do them. They're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What's he doing now?
Well, Mike, you know, he does the Mike D Band, and he plays with Ricky Lee Jones.
Right.
He tours with her.
Him and Hubbard did that together, right?
I think so. Yeah. And Mikey does it more often. I think he is, you know, when she tours, he's with her.
Right, right.
And I think he's playing with Les Claypool's
one
of his solo bands as well. And then he's just Mike, you know, he's got Nola Tet, I think is the name of his jazz quartet from New Orleans that travels. And Mike is the hardest working musician I know, no question.
Yeah.
250 to 300 gigs a year.
Jesus.
Yeah. In his van right now, I promise you. You know, wow. He's just like that. You know, he's really impressive. He's really impressive and just keeps going. You know, he's making his own thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the jam world, but he's a jazz player, and he's making his own industry. You know,
that world of improvisational music does go hand in hand,
right?
And there's a, you know, just like with everything, like there's good and there's bad stuff.
Sure.
Did you before you met these guys? Like, how did guitar come to you?
Guitar came to me out of just being quiet and shy, you know. I mean, literally, that's why it came to me early on, and just like, I could do this, I could express this way, and, you know, youngest in the family, stuff like that. So guitar was a perfect outlet for a kid like me. And so Jimmy Page, you know, stuff like that. He was my hero early on, absolutely, and I learned a lot of stuff. Jimmy Page, Ted Nugent, I don't care, I'll admit it. I loved Ted Nugent when I was a kid. Holy crap. And then lots of stuff, you know, just things like that. That's what brought me to guitar. And then Rush and things like that. What really changed for me was getting to go to Booker T. Washington, getting to go to Arts Magnet, and then getting turned on. Certainly getting turned on to jazz in school. I didn't take to jazz like, wow, I need to learn this. Swing and things like that are great. I love listening to them, but it doesn't. I don't feel the need to learn that or play that, except for the musical aspects of it. But what I really learned was from my friends. Everybody was listening to Devo. I turned on to Bob Marley, Mahavishnu Orchestra.
You do have a reggae. When you slide into that, it's very, very, very legit.
Nice, thanks.
Yeah, it's not like white dude reggae.
That's cool.
I know we both had to see a few times, probably at Dada.
There's plenty of that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. But yeah, that's right. You know, Devo and Bob Marley, Mahavishnu Orchestra, and just that's where I got turned on to all the music that I still listen to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was like... What kind of bands did you have, like, in high school?
What kind of bands?
Did you have any bands that...
Well, no big bands. No bands. There was a band called Fuque, spelled like fuck you. Excuse me, is this a podcast? Can I say that? Okay. And, but it was Q-U-E, so... Fuck you, Q-U-E. Anyway, but that was a high school band that we did, and... did some gigs, and then that became a band called The Knobs. That was my high school band, The Doors. The band was, it's a long story. Anyway, a band called The Knobs, which was with Brad, myself, and John Bush, and this drummer named Big Al Emmer, who's the drummer for Brave Combo.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the four of us,
he's the drummer for Brave Combo now?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the old guy, the older drummer?
Well, there was Mitch Marine was a really early guy. Yeah. Yeah, wow, you knew Mitch. Yeah, you've been around. Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
he's Dwight Yoakam for years, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I loved that band so much, man.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Sorry, I didn't.
No worries. You know, but high school, you know, we had that band. But in high school, what really, at Booker T. Washington Arts Magnet, all of our group of friends, we were called Munchers, Munch Puppies.
Okay.
And that kind of came from a friend of ours who was a cartoonist, made this cartoon and called, with a couple friends of ours, and made caricatures of them, called them Munchers. And so we were called Munchers, and... Munching was a name of, it was a kind of jamming. You're munching out. It's a way, and it's also, you know, we would get hungry for some reason, you know, after jamming.
Of course.
Things would make us hungry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, high school stoners, and we were the Munchers. And, but Aaron Comas, a lot of really wicked musicians came out of Booker T at that time. And, you know, we
How
still
do I
will.
Know that guy, Aaron Comas.
He is the drummer for the Spin Doctors.
Okay.
Yeah. All legendary now.
He lives here, doesn't he?
No, he's still in New York. He's been up in New York for the whole time, and they all met each other at the New School up there and have stayed friends and close up there.
Okay.
And anyway, so the Munchers, you know, so the Munch Puppies would play, we would play parties, and not a lot of times we wouldn't be asked. You know, we have horn players that would play with us too. And if we heard there was a party, we would show up with instruments. And literally, Big Al would go set up his drums. I'd have guitar, bass, drums. And before the person who was having the party knew it, there was a band playing in some room in their house. You know, we were asked to leave a couple times. We just loved doing that.
Yeah.
We'd just show up with our shit and just start playing. And
what were you doing? What kind of music were you doing?
It was Miles jazz jams mixed with Black Sabbath.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Are you a Sabbath guy?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Deep Purple. I'm a 70s hard rock dude. I loved Deep Purple, loved Black Sabbath.
Did you ever get into like the crazy guitar guys in the like the 80s, the Yngwie world of Randy Rhoads or
when that started happening? That's when I was at Booker T. You know, I appreciated Randy Rhoads, and I, you know, having those roots, I still liked. I liked Riot. I didn't give a shit. You know, I like Rat and stuff. You know, so when that stuff would, just, that's what was going on. But I was already at Booker T. and playing other stuff that I was really into. But I appreciated that, so I jumped ship into a different kind of player at that point. Although I appreciated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still listen to the same music that you've listened to your whole life. How is it that always happens to all of us? I work new stuff in all the time, but like I don't like. It's hard not to listen to what you have always liked.
That's true. It still comes up, but if you do that too much, you're going to, you know, find yourself the one day, what can I listen to? Nothing sounds interesting. And, you know, you got to work at it to make something interesting and something fresh for your ears. These days, what I'm really into is really old country.
Yeah.
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 And the songs and the stories of it and things like that. And
Carter Family kind of thing. I just watched that thing, so I feel like I'm
I know,
a
right?
Wild
I did too. And that kind of refreshed my whole interest in it. My roots are Kentucky hillbilly. My grandparents were from Kentucky hillbillies, and my grandparents went on a, you know, horse-drawn wagon to Worcester, Ohio, where I was born. That's so
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and I have actually bluegrass roots. My great uncle Junior made guitars and fiddles, and it's something I plan on exploring. I'm going to try to get one of those instruments, and I'm starting to get into these Kentucky roots, and I've been really into bluegrass lately, and I'm going to take that on. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what's funny about I've never really connected with it, and I feel like there's whatever I've listened to lacks a dynamic that I need.
Yeah,
and it seems like in your, like, all the music that I've heard that you've made does kind of have a dynamic where it gets quiet and it gets bigger. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Is that hard? I mean, like, am I wrong?
No, I appreciate that, and you know what's funny is I hear the dynamic in country music more than I used to.
Huh.
I you know, it's like it's a different thing if you follow the story. There's the dynamic.
Yeah.
And the music's way more subtle. It's way more subtle, and I hear it more, you know, and it gets me. I mean, the tune I've heard a million times, Long Black Veil. Dude, that's a good song. Holy crap.
I think I know what you're talking about. I
might be Lefty Frizzell.
Okay, yeah.
Long Black Veil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really, really good. And if you listen to the story and just, it starts to, it's a different dynamic, you know, and, you know, I can hear Edie's words in my ears like, yeah, it's been like that forever.
Yeah.
Thanks for finally coming around. But, I mean, you know, honestly, though, in our band, just immediately, okay, so here's what happened. New Bohemians were a band already, and Eric Presswood was the guitar player.
Right.
And Edie had joined the band, and for whatever reason, the separation was happening, and Eric was anyway, I was going to maybe be the new guitar player, so I came over to jam one night, and, you know, I was a fusion dude at that time. I liked Miles Davis, and I liked Mahavishnu, and so I practiced John McLaughlin stuff all the time, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play like that. That's where my head was at. But I walked in the rehearsal space, and the first thing we play is an open A chord, and it was just one four. I don't know what it was, but something about playing with Edie, like, immediately made me, it's just songs. And I, like, I don't know where it came from, but all I cared about was songs then. That's, I don't care if it's two chords. I don't care if it's one chord. I don't care what it is. It was just weird. It just kind of got stripped away. And there's a song we have called Plain Jane. We wrote that the first day. It is the most easy 1-4-5. It's the easiest of songs. Every song we wrote that day is completely easy. And so just the band really changed everything. And I started to appreciate this song. And anyway,
I think that's what really differentiates. If you guys are playing like a jam festival or something like that, you can jam, but you also do have songs. There are some jam bands that lack the songs.
That's what I'm...
Which is a danger.
That's what I'm, you know, there's no Edie on the jam scene. There's nobody who okay, I'm gonna riff this song.
Yeah.
Let alone the fact that she's a female. There's person that does it. And there's definitely not a female, not. I mean, Tedeschi Trucks.
I mean,
she is really, really awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I love her. But I mean, you know,
they have songs too.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They really do. And that's a great example. And she probably has everything to do with that, for sure. But I mean, there's, you know, who else? There's really not, you know, a big female on the jam scene. And
no.
I think it's there for the taking, and I think people will be blown away by her. A lot of, you know, we're kind of reintroducing ourselves, you know. We have no illusions, you know. We're from a long time ago. We jam. That's what we do all the time, and now there's a whole industry set up for it, you know. But those people don't know us. So we're sort of reintroducing ourselves and coming in, and, you know, it's interesting.
How does it feel now to do this on your own terms, as opposed to, like, at the, you know, when you first started making records? I know that you guys had a lot of people sitting on your heads, you know?
Yeah.
And you get to make your decisions now.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we're better at it. I think we could be trusted with the decisions a little more, you know? And, you know,
we're also not 22.
Not 22. And, you know, and looking back at a lot of the stuff we did know more than we thought we did back in those days. And, you know, to say no at those, if I'd have gone back, I'd have said no a couple more times than I did, to tell you the truth. You start to realize, you know, age and, you know, yes, a lot of insight comes with experience, but also the flash of inspiration is truth, man, you know, at whatever age, yeah. You know? So,
yeah. Well, I don't want to keep you guys from your social media day.
Social media. That sounds awful. I hope nobody heard that.
No, I'm just that's kidding. It's, you know what?
No,
in
we are.
Some
we're
ways,
having...
I was going to ask you, like, what is that? How does that feel at this point? But the other thing too is it is you're in control of it. You're doing it. You wore the shirt you wanted to wear. You didn't have. They didn't send a lady to your hotel to.
That only happened once. But you, so
yeah,
funny.
No, but those things are. I mean, I've been through that. It's
yeah.
not. It's not you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels weird.
Yeah,
and people try to. They go like, hey, we love you, but we want you to be this thing that we think is better.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, we didn't get a whole lot of that.
No?
Yeah, because we were the oddball.
Okay.
So we kind of got under the...
They gave it to you. They were like, all right.
There were, I mean...
They're hippies.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean, you know, we never watched the video for Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Because you know, that's not to say that there were people coming in that tried to make us something that like, whoa, what is that? That tended to happen in the videos, I'll be honest with you. That's a trippy video. I don't know if you've ever seen
yeah.
the...
Yeah. I watched it that night after I saw you play with Billy Gunn.
Yeah, with the...
Yeah,
with the
you all kind of like lit, black and white, soft kind of...
Well,
and isn't like we're Matt playing
a... Yeah, well, we're in front of that... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Mama Help Me. Excuse me.
Okay.
Mama Help Me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where we're standing in front of the wall of people that are immersed into the wall.
I don't remember that video as much as I think I bought that album the day it came out.
Right on.
And I saw you guys at... Might have been on that... It was on that tour. Right, you guys played at Tower Theater in Houston.
Yeah,
did you do that?
Yeah,
that
we
tour?
Did that.
Yeah, my friend David Rice opened for you.
Oh wow!
And I got to tag along with him.
Nice.
To go to the show. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Kenny, this has been a pleasure. Oh,
hey,
there's another
yes,
thing.
Man.
What else are you doing now? Is there anything that you're out there?
Well, so teach? Many things. A lot of things dissolved when this came together. That the school that I was working for at the time, they did have to close their doors for funding, but had a 10-year, you know, for public funding, they had a great 10-year run, but unfortunately they did close their doors. And a lot of things just kind of, I was playing in a band called Forgotten Space and playing Grateful Dead music for about 11 years and uh-huh. touring around quite a bit. And so I kind of stepped away from that at the same time. And this all came, so I'm really kind of just doing this right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then Nubo's the quartet, us guys,
are doing some shows.
Yeah, we are. We're doing instrumental shows. There's a show coming up called the Days of the Deadhead down here in Austin.
Uh-huh.
That's November 2nd, and we're doing an instrumental show there. And but this band, I think, is going to tour, and I think that'll be great for the jam scene, because we're going to get in action and just jam instrumentally. And anyway, we're setting the groundwork
good,
for the jam scene with this band, and then it'll filter over into Nubos, into EBNB. So yeah,
okay,
yeah,
a lot of different incarnations.
Yeah, yeah, we got the two, but yeah. I mean, we're known as Edie Brickell and New Bohemian, so to everybody but people in Dallas, we're like, well, we should just, you know, because Edie can't work all the time. We're gonna work. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, Kenny, man, it's been great.
Hey, man, I appreciate
you
very,
so
very much.
Man.
Hey,
very
thank
great
you.
Talking to you.
Great talk to you. Thank you.
Kenny Withrow of Edie Brickell and New Bohemians. You can find them at ebnewbos.com. And actually, you can see New Bohemians doing their instrumental music at Day of the Deadhead, Saturday, November 2nd, here in Austin, Texas. Go to, I'll put a link to this on our Facebook page, the link to the event. I found it on Facebook. Anyway, what a great conversation, man. What a great guy. It was fantastic. It was great getting to hang out and see that thing that they were filming and like the set that they had built. It was real cool. I guess follow them on social media and you'll get to see some of that stuff. Great talking to Kenny Withrow. I want to thank him for taking the time to sit out and talk to me over there at Soundcheck. That's where we did this, all right? And hey, listen, if you're just coming to the show for the first time, we're available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find podcasts. You get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday, and every once in a while, like today, a surprise Thursday show. All right? Thank you so much for listening. I'm Johnny. I'm the host. Let's get back to some Edie Brickell, New Bohemians music, all right? Thank you to Kenny Withrow for talking to me. Let's get down.